This month, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing about the rise of white nationalism. And as it was streamed online by YouTube, the platform was inundated with hate speech. The racist and anti-Semitic comments got so bad, YouTube disabled comments on the live stream. It's just the latest in the seemingly constant string of examples that civil discourse in our democracy is suffering. Carolyn Lukensmeyer is the Executive Director Emerita of the National Institute for Civil Discourse at the U of A, and she says since the 2016 election, the situation has only gotten worse. She was a guest on the show a few years ago after the 2016 election when the NICD was calling for the restoration of civility in our political dialogue. So how have we gotten anywhere?
Well, tragically, in the last couple of years, both our political discourse and, frankly, our public discourse has continued to be as degraded as it was post-2016. And given how frequently, whether the genesis is a presidential tweet, whether it is a member of Congress being completely inappropriate about someone across the aisle, or frankly, what we hear at the Institute is this is happening in people's ordinary living. There are family members that still aren't talking to one another in the way that they did prior to this presidential election. We hear of lots of places of worship that have fractures amongst the congregants. And frankly, we even get calls from workplaces where people's productivity has really dropped and not returned to what it was. So the picture is not a positive one in terms of what has happened in the ensuing 2 years.
So that's fascinating that it's not just the political discourse, it's not just among our leaders, this is in people's homes.
And frankly, we've started to speak about it's like a virus. It's really just running through the country. And it clearly started in our politics, and it clearly was modeled by our leaders. But something has happened in the way people identify on whether it's a policy issue like immigration or the wall, or whether it's I'm a Democrat and you're a Republican. Mm-hmm. We no longer look at those as just differences. We look at those as enemies. And therefore, we've stopped being as open to even hearing and talking with people who hold the opposite point of view as we do.
So I wonder if you can give us a little sense of the implications of this. I mean, obviously, we're in the midst of it, so who knows? But have we been at a point like this in our past in this country?
Well, frankly, this is something that we have interviewed a fair number of political historians about.
Yeah.
And we've been made sure to cover the spectrum in terms of historians who tend to lean liberal in their own political philosophies and those who lean more conservative in their philosophies. And to a person, the response is the same. We haven't seen anything like this since the Reconstruction Jim Crow era after the Civil War,
wow,
where this was so personal and deeply dividing families, deeply dividing in our places of worship and our places of work.
So we're in a different point in history, right? This isn't after the Civil War, but what do you think is different now? What do you think has led to this?
Well, I think it's a combination of structural reasons that we don't often think about, because those structural reasons have been operating in our country in some cases for as much as 40 years. But they're things like redistricting, where we have so many single-member districts that it's utterly predictable who's going to win them because of the way the lines are drawn. Too much money in politics is what many Americans talk about as leading to this kind of toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I know we'll talk more about this, but the complete change of the information ecology because of the internet. Now, where you get your information depends on which filter bubble you're part of.
Yeah.
So it's these kinds of structural issues that have gotten us to this point.
Right. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the social media aspect of this. I mean, obviously, Twitter comes to mind in the political universe and the way that discourse is carried out by many of our leaders right now on that platform. What do you think the role is of platforms like that and social media in general?
Well, the interesting thing to me, in each of the earlier dominant communication modes, starting with print and then radio and then television, there came a point where society agreed there needed to be some standards. There needed to be some ethics involved in how that medium was used for mass communication. In the age of the internet, there's been a complete rejection of there being any standards in terms of preventing what has now developed into a serious social political problem, which is the kind of toxic rhetoric that we are constantly seeing. Social media, by its very structure, actually encourages people to be reactive and emotional. So there really has to be a move toward looking toward regulation, which clearly is happening at the national level on all the platforms.
Yeah. So let's talk about then the responsibility of social media platforms. Like, so just last week we saw a House Judiciary Committee hearing about the rise of white nationalism that was being streamed on YouTube. And as it's being streamed on YouTube, the comments devolve into this thread of racist comments and hate speech that YouTube ended up having to shut it down to some extent. So, you know, what is the responsibility of these companies that now hold so much of this power?
Well, I think that is front and center the issue of what is legitimate speech to be on the platforms that are available in social media. Just like we dealt with that with television, just like we dealt with that with radio and with print. You know, no newspaper in the country would print the kind of words and language and vicious toxicity that we saw go up on YouTube after that hearing. But we haven't yet taken the step to say hate speech is not legitimate. And when we legislate against hate speech, it does not interfere with someone's First Amendment rights.
So I want to then end with a question about how we fix this, right? Like, is there at this point a way to put the cat back in the bag, I guess, or have you kind of reached a point of no return with some of this stuff?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that, Lauren. And frankly, we at the National Institute are very, very hopeful and have lots of evidence that this can be mitigated against. And the hope comes from the American people. At the same time that this sort of rhetoric has been increasing in our politics and in our public squares and even in our homes, many, many more Americans, and I mean millions, are waking up to, if something's going to change about this, we're going to have to change it.
That's Carolyn Lukensmeyer with the National Institute for Civil Discourse at the University of Arizona. The NIDC has developed a docuseries that showcases the efforts of many Americans to improve civil discourse. It's called Divided We Fall, and you can find out more about it on our website. That's theshow.kjzz.org.